This is WOR 710 Radio New York.
And here he is, the man who has made the Jews' heart pay. Your friend and mine, Gene Shepherd. All right, he's my friend. Smart guys. Oh, yes, I must say, before we begin here, though, for those of you who are out there listening on the radio, I am looking down on a scene of such unbridled debauchery as to make a man of good taste feel nothing but repulsion, right, gang? Too bad you missed it, though, crowd. Oh, yeah, I bet most of us have, you know, I think most of us have that terrible sick feeling about the sexual revolution they keep talking about, and you ain't been invited yet. You know, you keep reading about it in Life magazine. That was, you wonder what's going on in life, you know? Well, oh, yes, we have a very special thing tonight. I don't know whether many of you know this, but in just an hour and a half at midnight, we begin a week-long celebration here in America. It is National Humor Week. I don't quite know how to celebrate it. What do? You know, you tell a couple of dirty stories, listen to a couple of political speeches, laugh at the right places, you know. But I've always said that the best kind of humor is the totally unconscious humor, completely. And I brought down a thing that I'm going to seal in my great, vast storehouse of trivia, so that in the year 5000, and they dig up this little capsule that I'm burying it back at WOR in the parking lot there, they'll come across this and they'll see what it was really like in the 20th century, as opposed to all the official books we write about. You know, the official novels by Mailer and all this stuff. They don't really write about us. No, they don't. They don't write about people like you and me. They write about guys like James Bond, Sebastian Dangerfield. You know, these are really real people, aren't they, gang? Reminds you of the old crowd back in Pittsburgh, you know? The real man is never written about, and I am putting this into my little collection here. It is a press release. Now, have you ever seen a press release? This is a real one. Yeah, it is. It's all mimeographed, you know, and at the top, it has this line, "For further information, please contact Charlie Ross and Associates." Very official. He's a press agent. I could see Charlie and his associates all sitting there with blue telephones. They got these chicks with blue hair. And they've got blue shirts. You know, they like unified color picture down there, all dynamic. And they're sitting over there on Lexington Avenue. And they're sending this stuff out. And here's what it says. Notice. To all media. Well, I'm media. This little thing here is media, see? Notice. To all media. And this is the most fantastic piece of unconscious humor I've read in years. Dr. Timothy Leary. Oh. Internationally known. Now, wait a minute. Don't start laughing yet, gang. You ain't heard it. It gets better. Dr. Timothy Leary, internationally known as the father of LSD. I wonder who the mother was. She must have been some chick. The father of LSD will hold a press conference at the New York Advertising Club. He's holding it at the New York Advertising Club on Park Avenue. And why? It'll be Monday to announce the formation of the League of Spiritual Discovery. A new religion. How about that? Announcing a new religion at the ad club. And getting a press agent to send out releases on it. I kind of like that. And the new religion uses LSD sacrament. I could see all these guys bombed out of their skulls. The religion, the worshipers are contemplating. And somebody says, well, they look like they're bombed to me. That word is never used in this church. And that gives me a whole new idea. You know, can't you see how much better it is in our time with the new techniques? Can you imagine Buddha announcing his new religion? And he goes up to the press club. And he gets, oh, at the bottom, by the way, it says, those interested in setting up television facilities to interview the various worshipers can write and contact the New York Advertising Club immediately. They're all available for interviews. And I thought to myself, that's a fantastic idea. That's a whole new concept of religion. That anything you're hung on, and people are mad at you for doing it, make it a religious thing. Nobody can argue with you about your religion. No, my poor old Uncle Carl, you know, his religion actually was straight corn liquor. Yeah, that's right. That's all he lived for. Every night he had this corn scene. It would bomb him out of his skull. And everybody said, there goes Uncle Carl drunk again. And just think, if it had been in the 1960s, it could have been, there goes Uncle Carl. Isn't he a fine religious man? Notice how he's contemplating his navel. And there he is, flat on the ground. You know? He's all balled up there in the gutter. You know? And I thought to myself, you know, that's a great idea. Anything that you get kicks out of, set up a whole new religion. For example, now, of course, when you start a religion, you've got to have trappings. Now, one thing that I've always secretly felt, and I hope there are a few other penitents in this crowd, that I've always secretly felt a little nudge of conscience about. I don't know whether I should say this. Yeah, you hold it. Put your hand over her ears, please. I can see that she's not quite ready for it yet. She's very young. How many of you are secret mainline chunk peanut butter addicts? I mean, secretly, you, whenever there's a bottle of peanut butter, you know, a jar of that Skippy peanut butter there, you have to drag yourself past, you know. And secretly at 2 o'clock in the morning, you go out, you and you know, you're just waiting for somebody to say, hey, you're going to get fat. Oh, boy, oh, what a fat slob you're going to be. Oh, no. Now you can start a religion, and I'm going to propose it right now. I'm going to become the Swami, the father of chunky peanut butter. Oh, yeah, you've got to have a thing, see. Let's see, now how I do this. Does this work all right? See, now walk down the street contemplating my navel, see? And I'll have a picture of Skippy done in hieroglyphics across the thing. See, and you, oh yes, you know that all good religions, by the way, have to have rituals. And you can't get the first base. I don't know whether you've ever seen Dr. Leary. He doesn't dress like a doctor now. There's this long bed sheet. I mean, if you're gonna contemplate the infinite, you gotta do it in costume. Oh yeah, you just can't walk around with a pair of coveralls, you know. Look into the face of truth. Now, here I am, see. The peanut butter guru. Turn out the light, see. 3 o'clock in the morning, all the other peanut butter scoffers are around. And before me is this jar of sacred peanut butter that purportedly came from the hand of Skippy himself. And I have this big Mr. Peanut, you know, Planters Peanut. I have it hung on the wall, see, done in tapestry and needlepoint.
In not agricola conch, in est spittle valk.
That's our slogan, meaning when you get high on peanut butter, man, it's a gas. If Christ were here today, he would dig peanut butter. And of course, you've got to have a name for your phenomenon. Psychedelic is a great name. That's a great name for being bound. So, we our name, we've come up with a great name. It's the phenomena of, how about glutophonics? Meaning gluttony. You know, like, how about glutothenia? That's even better, and you could call it dynamic spiritual glutothenia. And so we're experiencing this new thing. We sit there,
in hoc agricola conch, in est spittle auch.
And the virgins among us, that won't be easy. That's not easy, you know, that's all part of the new revolution, see? But we'll find a couple, and they go out among the worshipers and pass out the sacred Nabisco crackers. See? And then when they're ready, then my chief, well, he's really, I suppose you might say, a disciple. See? This guy dressed in the Mr. Peanut suit. You ever seen Mr. Peanut when he used to stand up there on Times Square and hand out the peanut butter? And hand out the peanuts, the planter. We'll get him, see? Then I'll give him the word. I'll stand up and I'll say, in hoc agricola conch, in est spittle valk. And he walks around with this sacred silver bowl of chunk-style peanut butter. And very carefully he passes it out to each one of us. Then I say, Who is hic, hike, hoke? Scoffo, scoffo, scoffofum, meaning eat. And then we start shoveling it in, hour after hour. And then by 5 o'clock in the morning, we're all peanut buttered up. Sitting there, you know, But each one of us in direct contact with that great vision of the infinite. Just barely touching. Oh, yes, we're living in great times. How many of you want to be part of my religion? Come on! Or would you prefer Tutti Frutti's Anonymous? Oh, yeah, I can think of all kinds of things that you could build around your religion. And, you know, listening to that, I thought to myself, you know, that's a great thing, that business of being able to make your weakness into a positive virtue. Poor old Uncle Carl. When I think back on the days when he actually admitted he was a drunk, he was, you know, he was one of the Neanderthal men who admitted, you know, his problems. I can remember Mr. Bruner. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, see. And I'm getting my education in life. That's when you get it, you know. You don't get it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with Miss Snyder, you know. Oh, no, no, that's education. I'm talking about education. It's 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm 8 years old, you know. I'm lying in the sack. I have just spent, you know, my day with the Miss Shields. We've just begun multiplication. We didn't even know there was another kind yet. We just thought the hardest kind was 7 times 5. You know, and we're lined up just there in the sack, and my kid brother is in the next sack there. It's 2 in the morning, and it's quiet. It's fall, just like it is now. And you can feel a few little slight touches of wind blowing in off the lake. It's the beginning of the mating season. How many of you are aware that, well, of course, we're part of the mammal crowd, you know. No, you can't. Don't look at me like that, sir. You are, too. No, we all are, and mammals have certain instincts. Now, a lot of people think they don't have them. They think only the rotten people got it. Well, I'm just curious how many people have, you know, they feel this thing down inside of them. This little gray furry thing. It's got little red eyes, see, and claws. And it's swimming around above your pancreas. Swimming back and forth. And it keeps saying, grab her, go on, grab her. And you're standing there. You know, and you keep thinking, oh, why me? Why am I so rotten? Oh. What is so sick and rotten about me? Look at all these other people walking around dressed up so nice in suits. Look at all these nice people. Why am I so rotten? All this is going on in your head, see? And this girl is talking to you. It's a cocktail party. And she is saying, of course, if you consider the attitude of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, is concerned, and you're saying, yes. Well, I don't know. And all the while, that little thing is going... And you're wearing your gray suit. Yeah, a lot of guys think if they buy very dark suits, it won't show. You know, that evil that lurks in the hearts of men. Who is it? Who is the one who knows only? Oh, the shadow ain't the only one, baby. Oh, no, no. I'm a kid, see. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm lying there, see. And then you hear this sound. You hear a kind of scraping sound. A steady... It is Mr. Bruner. He is crawling up the driveway. He crawls up the driveway twice a week. Coming and going. You hear Bruner, see? Mr. Bruner worked on the railroad. He worked in the roundhouse. And he was out of work for 34 years. He was on what they call the extra board. Have you ever heard of the extra board in the railroad? Well, the extra board are guys that they call in case of major train wrecks. And Mr. Bruner lived between disasters. And so he would get work like once every 2 months, they'd call up Bruner. And he'd get his paycheck, $7.50. And on the way home, he would stop at the Bluebird Tavern. And he would stop there to celebrate his day of work. And 4 days later, I would hear that sound. Bruner, by the way, how many of you have got connotations with words like that? Whenever I think of Bluebird, when I'm a kid, see, my mother used to stand there by the sink. She's got these Brillo pads. I don't know what the hell she was Brilloing all the time. She was Brilloing her whole life, you know. Our whole world, she's got these two Brillo pads. I remember one fantastic Christmas. My father gave her a box of 12 brand new gold-colored Brillo pads. Beautiful, you know. And she's working away there. And the sink is burping. Yeah, we had the sink all the time. And we'd go, ah. And coffee grounds would come up in her face. Apple core. A fish head. Blah. And they weren't ours, you know. All over the neighborhood, you know. Everybody's sink would burp up everybody else's stuff, you know. And so she'd push it back down with the plumber's helper. It sinks all over the neighborhood. And they'd push it back down. We'd finally work it away to the south side of town, all of it, you know. All the junk and the life. And I remember her standing there, see, working her way over the sink. And she's got this radio. She had a radio on the top of the refrigerator. And it was one of these white plastic ones, you know, with the big round airplane dial with the red numbers that light up. and it was totally covered with white adhesive tape. Because my old man would come home from bowling. This was a typical sound in the house, see. Again, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm asleep. Then I'd hear, whoa! The old man comes roaring up the driveway in the Oldsmobile, see. You'd just hear him slew around, you know. Talk about Batmobile, you know. You'd hear him slew around in the driveway and kicking the dirt and the gravel up on the side of the house. And then you'd hear, whoo! He made it again. Yet, oh, let me tell you one night, one great moment. One night, you hear this sound. I'll never forget it. It was one of the major traumas in our house. It's quiet. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Up the driveway. Whoa! Boom! There was another pregnant pause. Boom! He went through 3 garages. He went over the drive, went through ours. It was wide open, you know. He used to come right in. You ever have an old man that says, watch this, you know? He slams on the brakes, you know. Ah! Right through the back of the garage. He goes right over the alley. He goes right through Strickland's garage on the other end. He goes over a hedge. He goes through a compost heap, and he... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, his fraternity pin. He was just handing it to her. Now he... He dropped it in her Bloody Mary. Oh, love is great. You know? Well, you know... I remember this scene. See, my mother is hanging over the sink. She's got the Brillo pads. And on the icebox is the radio. That poor old battered radio. In fact, that radio, it was kind of a counterpoint in our house. 2 o'clock in the morning, the old man comes in for bowling. And you could tell how his team did. You know, if it happened as it usually did, you'd hear the door slam. Bam! You'd hear it like that, see? But you hear my mother, shh, shh, shh. He bowled 132 again. Oh, my God, his hook isn't working again. Oh, what are we going to do now? Then you're boom, 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 pregnant pause. Then he slams open the refrigerator door. He looks in there. He's looking in for his beer. Oh, what a great commercial this would make. You know, he's got his bowling bag in one hand, you know, his tie ripped open. The defeated bowling team member. He looks into the refrigerator, he boom, like that, and instantly, of course, the lettuce flies out. He picks it up, sticks it back in. And he's looking past the old hamburgers and the petrified peas and all of that. One third of a meatloaf that was left over from last Easter a year ago. You know, it still has a little decoration, a little lamb's head on it and all that, you know. Looking in there, see. And then you hear him. He reaches in and grabs the beer. This is his life force. He grabs that bottle of Blatz. Isn't that a sickening sound? Blatz. Schlitz. You know. Ah, Anheuser-Busch. He grabs that Blatz. See, you hear, boom. Then you hear... Walks away, see, and he goes boom with the door. There's a pregnant pause, and then you hear crash. My mother's radio. That was her connection to Bing Crosby. I mean, real life was out there on the other side of that loudspeaker. Then the old man, you hear brag about, you know, that. How many of you remember Daddy swearing? There's a real art form. By the way, how many of you are Dr. Spock fans? Does he recommend any special kind of swearing? Around the kids, the old man, you hear... But then my mother would... You'd hear my mother in the bed. She says, fix it. Then you hear... Damn radio. And then she'd go... It's all right. And then you hear him. He goes into the John, and he's getting the adhesive tape. And now, here is our radio. It's sitting on the top of the icebox. and it looks like a taped football. And you can, you know, it's all battered, pieces of pleather tube hanging out the back. And the dial never worked at all. She would just guess. You know, you turn it so wide, you know, the whistles would come out. But I remember her standing there by the sink. One of those peculiar philosophical moments of education. I'm standing by the, you know, I'm standing over there making a sandwich, knocking together a salami sandwich. How many of you have exotic tastes in sandwiches? I would like to recommend salami. You know, the soft kind? The real stinky kind of salami? Oh, boy, I'd like to start... Listen, I could start a whole religion based on salami. I mean, you could have two different sects. You could have the hard salami. And they're very mad. They hate all the guys that believe in soft salami. The hard salami are the orthodox guys, see? And here's the soft salami crowd who get theirs at, say, places like Kroger's, you know. Places like D'Agostino, you know. They just get it anywhere. And I used to take the salami. For those of you who like a real salami sandwich that I was hung on when I was about 9 through about 12, you take thick salami, the soft kind. You know, the kind that, as you look at it, it radiates. You know, it sends out waves of passion. And then you put it on rye bread, see? And then you go into the icebox and you take out this jar and you bring it out. And you take a spoon and you spoon out a full tablespoon of this elixir, strawberry preserve. Oh. Yeah, it's great! Oh, come on now! Now look, I admit I'm depraved, but I admit it. You guys all sit there, where's your tolerance? Well, you put this strawberry jam, see? Oh, I can't go on. Oh, no. So here's the scene. I'm making one of these sandwiches, see? I'm already in a euphoric. I'm in a state of being gassed, see? And my mother is hanging over the sink, and the radio is playing. And on comes this record, and it's a guy singing. The bluebird of happiness. The bluebird of happiness. And my mother's got a big tear. And he's singing about the bluebird of happiness is looking over my shoulder. You know, it's that kind of voice, you know, the bluebird of happiness is looking. My mother's going... And, you know, when a kid sees his mother cry, he doesn't like this. I says, Mom, what's the matter? Mom, she was, well... She says, be quiet. The bluebird of happiness. And I keep thinking of the Bluebird Tavern. You know, the two things are crossing my mind. I'm only 8. The only bluebird I know is the place where Mr. Bruner got his fix. Oh, what a rotten tavern it was. Boy, I'd see guys fly out, you know. I can remember seeing one fantastic afternoon my Sunday school teacher. He came flying out of the door. He was...
This is WR Radio, your station for news.
Now...
Okay, all right. All right, I'll take you on one at a time. All right, the line forms back there by the jocks. And by the way, I am not sorry for what I said. Boo! I say it again. That's what all of you are. Boo! Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself? There is Vox Populi. The voice of the intelligent man on the street here. Oh, boy, you can see why 50 million Frenchmen have always been wrong. Well, all right, we're back here. Now, at ease, fella, your show starts in 20 minutes. It starts out in the middle of the street with two cops. Now, you'd be surprised how quick you get out there. Oh, you know, in fact, I may do it myself. feel it'll work out here. Oh, yeah. Oh, one more thing, though. I have to say that in connection with burying that wonderful piece of fantastic unconscious humor, which we have today, which I've just read to you, how many of you are archaeology fans? Well, you know, that's that new San Diego team. In the American Football League. But seriously, though, I think we all, because, you see, archaeology, now wait a minute, just hear me out. Archaeology represents the garbage left behind by guys who were here first. It really does, you know. They leave behind shirt buttons and shoes and little pieces of sample, you know. In fact, I had one of these terrific moments of insight up at the Museum of Natural History. How many of you have been up there recently? Talk about education. They've got a gigantic green sign. I tell you, the truth comes out in secret ways with us when we're not expected to say it. There's a fantastic green sign that hangs up there, and it says, solar system and restrooms that way. Yeah, they're on the same side. Big arrow pointing, you know. I wonder how many thousands of Boy Scouts that has influenced. And secretly, you know, we are telling the first thing that man will do when he arrives on Venus. That's a long trip, you know. You ain't no Howard Johnson's in the solar system up there. You know. And they've got this case, you know, up there. Oh, I'll tell you, it's one of my favorite cases. Yeah, I love to go to museums. They got this case. And you can see it. It's up there at the Museum of Natural History. A big case. And on the bottom of this case is this mud. It's a slab of petrified mud. It's just laying there, see? And in that mud, you can see what's left of a sandal. Just a little piece of the sand, see? And here's a little chunk of the spear. There it is, laying there. And there's a little piece of a breastplate. And on this big case, it says, these are the actual remains of an Egyptian who lived 4,795 years before Christ. It's a long time ago. There he is. And I'm standing there, you know, and I'm looking down at this thing. This happened about a month or maybe 6 weeks ago. I'm looking at it. There's about six kids looking. There's this guy laying in the mud, see? You know, he's 5,000 years old or so. You know, he's laying in the mud. You can just see little pieces of him. And it suddenly hit me. Holy smokes. Someplace... maybe in the museum of the University of Pennsylvania, 5,000 years from now, there's a piece of petrified Route 9. See? You know, it's the asphalt from the driveway of a Howard Johnson or something, see? Or a Carvel stand or something, see? And there it is, and there is the remains of one of us. You know, I looked at that Egyptian, I says, my God, look at his weapons. These are his weapons. He's got his spear and his shield. And there will be a little sign, it'll say, 20th century man, found in vicinity of what once was called New Jersey. Here he is, found with his weapon. And there will be people looking down there, and one of us! I'm sure that this Egyptian that was walking around 5,000 years ago didn't know that he'd make it. You know, in showbiz. He's in showbiz now, you know. Many of the people are coming up and looking at him, see. And one of us may make it. So, fella, if you've given up hope, don't give up. You may be the one. You may make it 5,000 years from now. And they'll look down, and there you'll be with your weapons. There'll be your ballpoint pen. You know, your Tipwick, you know. And there's your diner's club card. There it is in the mud, you know. Oh, speaking of cards, How many of you collect credit cards? Oh, yeah, I've got a friend. No, seriously, I've got a friend who's got a whole roll of these things. They come in glassine envelopes. It's about 36 yards long. You know, and he loves to unroll them. I'm loved. Look how loved the Esso people. They trust me. Oh, Mr. Diner, he loves me. Look at that. And this man, Cardi Blanchi, he loves me. One of them Italian guys, you know. And there it is, you know. Oh, boy, what a love thing. And I'm thinking, can you imagine being seen 5,000 years from now? What would you like to have remain to represent you? You ever thought of the awful, awful things that perhaps TV guides? Can you imagine the only thing that lasts out of our civilization is one torn copy of TV Guide that got blown into the Jersey swamp, sank down in the mud, and got petrified and becomes the Rosetta Stone? You know, they're trying to figure out what our world was about, you know, what our religion. There's a full-page picture of a porpoise. You know, it's obviously a religious connotation there. They were animalists of some kind, you know. And the other day, though, seriously, though, I'm watching this thing at the museum. And I was reminded of something that I hadn't thought of in a long time. That I have a good chance of having something left behind. When I was a kid, just a walking around kid, you know, there is a point when we go through the secretive age. You know, the age of skulking? You know, when you got, not, you don't have secrets. You consider yourself a secret. Yeah, you know that period when you take to sitting in the closet? You know, and you're knee deep in tennis shoes? And overshoes, and the coats are hanging down, you know. It's the secret age, or else you hide down in the basement. Let me tell you, I had a period when I used to go down in the basement. See, I'd say to my mom, I'm going to work on my model airplane, Ma. Down I would go, see, down in the basement. And we had this old icebox that the people who had lived in our house before us had left behind. One of these big wooden ones, you know, with the big brass things, all of it. And on top of the icebox was all the junk my old man kept, you know, jars full of nails and hinges and all kinds of stuff for tires and junk. Well, I kept behind the icebox Northern Indiana's greatest collection of dirty magazines. Yeah, and here they were, you know, they were called things like Spicy Adventure. Spicy Western. Did you ever hear those? Yeah, they're great magazines. Yeah, there were great things like Tex Rhodes, a quiet stranger sitting tall in the saddle, into that dusty Western town. And above the saloon, Dolly, looking out of her window, her fantastic, this is all censored here, hanging out in the street, Oh, yeah, they had Western stories like that, see? And so I'm this kid, you know, and I used to say, I'm going to make a model airplane, Ma, yeah. You know that walk that the Groucho Marx has, you know? That's the lascivious walk. Down in the basement, see? So I pour a lot of glue around so it stinks up the house. You know, airplane glue. I'm working on the airplane, Ma, you know? She can smell the airplane glue. I get behind the icebox. Now I am sitting in the coal bin. Now, for those of you who have never experienced a coal bin, oh, yeah, anybody who has ever sat in a coal bin knows the entire concept of purgatory. It isn't quite hell, it's in between, see? And here are these big piles of coal all around you, and it's absolutely pitch black. And I would get behind a pile of coal. And it'd be just a little flicker of light would come in through the coal chute. Sweat, you know. I was going through my pimple period. And in those quiet afternoons, in the cold bin, in the dark, I could actually, it was so still then, I could hear my pimples growing. And once in a while, you'd hear one go, poof. You know. You know, and then outside on the, in that ambient air outside in the driveway and in the yards, I could hear Dawn Strickland, and I could hear Esther Jane Allberry, and they're riding their bikes and making girl sounds, you know, those little flute. And I'm sitting there. I bet they don't have none of that. Oh, yeah, I don't think women know the fantastic images and fantasies that go through the mind of man. Do they, men? Do you actually know? Oh, yeah, you know, and women just keep going right on, you know. You wonder whether they have those fantasies. You know, is there a girl somewhere hiding in the coal bin someplace? Looking at contraband copies of Playboy? You know, looking... Hey, have you ever thought about that center fold-out? If women's magazines had them? Can't you just see Vogue magazine, you know? And all these tall, skinny chicks getting Vogue every month when they shake the magazine and out he comes. You just stand there and a shirt ripped open. Says, Mr. July. Charlie Applerot, known as Boo Boo Applerot, drives a truck for the A&P. You know. Just don't hold your breath, men. No, ladies, women's magazines are all about women. Oh, yeah, that's all they write about is women in women's magazines, and men's magazines, all they write about is women. So you really got an insight as to the difference, you know, between the two sexes. It's fantastic, you know. Oh, yeah, can't you just see? I remember that great series they had in one of these magazines. You know, are you aware why they make them so they fold out? That's so that you don't even have to read the magazine. You just shake it, see? She flies right out, you know? Oh, yeah, so you get right at it real quick. Get right at it. Oh, yeah. I remember that great series. It had this starlet, see? And it says, Miss Boo Boo La Lesbia O'Toole. She's an Italian movie star, see? It shows getting fitted for a bra. Yeah, and it with 1,500 pages of color pictures, you know. She's standing in front of the mirror, you know. Another lady is fitting it, you know. Interesting camera angles. It was called artistic photography, you know. And there were all these. I can imagine, it just occurs to me, I can imagine the parallel in a ladies' magazine. You know, the champ chooses us. You know, angle shots. He's down at Herman's Sporting Goods store, you know. Aren't people rotten? Look at all you nice people from New Jersey. What are you laughing at? Well, you know, I'll tell you, though. I hear I'm sitting down in the basement, see, reading these magazines. Now, here's the whole point of the story. I'm going through the secretive period, you know, hiding things behind the icebox. Oh, listen, I will never forget the fantastic afternoon. I had this collection for about a year and a half, and I had my favorite magazines. You know, they were thumbed and worn, and you could see sweat stains. Ooh, you know, they were rotten and decadent, and I had them all hidden behind there. I remember one afternoon coming home from school,
I'm standing in the kitchen. I'm making a sandwich. My mother says, why don't you go work on the airplane? You know, she didn't know Ma liked Stinson Reliance, you know. She's a Curtis Robin fan, see? So she says, yeah. Okay, Ma. I go down in the basement. It's dark down there, you know, and you can see the tires and the shoes hanging and all. Dark. I look around. I get my airplane dope out. I pour it on the workbench, you know. I blow it so it goes up the stairs. I'm working on the airplane, Ma. Oh, boy, wow, I cut my hand again. Oh, gee, was well. I look around. Here's the icebox. The evil was already coming out. They're gone! Somebody got him. Who was it? Does my mother know? Who was it? At that night, I'm sitting at supper. Talk about awful moments. It has to be one of these three. Here's my mother at the end of the table with the meatloaf in front of her. She's got the mashed potatoes and the red cabbage. My old man is over here. He's stripped down to his underwear. Oh, yeah. The minute he came in the house, off of the clothes, you know. Just a minute. I always see my father forever, constantly frozen in a Long John suit. You know, the kind with the big trap door open, flying out behind him. You know. Forever, you know, just standing. So here he is over there. He's reading the sport page. And off to my right is my kid brother. And here I'm sitting. And you know that terrible feeling of guilt? Have you ever been so guilty that you couldn't eat? Just sick. You play with your food. Yeah. Sitting there. My father looks up at me and says, what's the matter with you? Nothing, Dad. I look over at my kid brother, and he's got his nose down, buried completely. In the mashed potatoes. See, my kid brother was going through that games playing period where you play games with your food. There were times when he'd make a big football out of all of it, you know, with the laces and everything, see? Yeah, then he would go through the period where he plays like he's a camel, you know. Yeah, that's the only way they could get him to eat. My mother would say, oh, well, Randy, why don't you play pig? He's not, you know, eating, you know. He's just sitting there like that. She'd say, play pig. And then he'd go, he's scoffing the stuff and it's coming out of his ear. Oh, yeah, we went, poor Dr. Spock, he didn't know our crowd, you know. In fact, we went through one period when we had to feed my kid brother. We had to feed him with a screwdriver. We fed him with a screwdriver and a plumber's helper. Just open the mouth, you know, stuff it in, you know. So I'm sitting there saying, I got that terrible feeling. See, oh, my God, somebody knows. Which one is it? And my mother's acting totally innocent. Completely, see. My kid brother is acting funny. Now, you know, he was a kid brother, see. And he was right in the middle, right in the middle of his Wizard of Oz period. See, and I didn't know how he would make it with that lady that lived in that western town. You know, whether he would understand it. And he's down there shoveling in the stuff. My old man is sitting there reading the sport page. There we are. Frozen in time. One guilty. Another a transgressor. Well, about 2.5 hours later, supper is over. The old man is now sitting in the front bedroom, you know. He's always sitting there. He's reading the sport page. Yeah, my father, you know, it took him 2.5 hours to read just this one page. You'd see his lips go. Yeah, well, it's such a terrible thing. I have to admit, you know, when Miss Shields said, children, she says, the sign, one of the great signs of ignorance is to move your lips when you read. You know, and I never thought, I thought people read that way. You know, Luke Appling today went, bah, bah. Oh, yeah, I love to see guys. Have you ever seen somebody who the saddest people of all, though, are the people whose lips move when they look at pictures. Yeah, they do. I've seen them, you know. You wonder, what the hell are they saying, you know? What's that dialogue that's going on in there? Well, here we are. It's about 2.5 hours later, see. We're in the living room. It's just about bedtime. And I'm sick with fear. I mean, it's just terrible, you know, it's just awful. My mother says, time for bed. Time for bed, let's go. Remember that phrase, time for bed? Oh, gee whiz. Oh, come on, gee, just one. I want to stay up. Come on, come on, in you go. I'm in the John, see. I'm going through that nightly routine of washing my face, you know, just like that. A little cold water on a face, you know, and you pick a little bit with your thing. How many of you remember the first time that you actually, all of a sudden, discovered the sink was down here? Do you remember that moment that used to be up here? You really remember that? Well, it happened to all of us. You damn well better remember it. It happened to you. And I'm standing by the sink, see, and the old man walks in. He says, say, where did you get those? All right. You know, I walk up. Little did I realize that my old man had his hidden in the garage. Speaking of obscenities, what radio station is this guy? And that's it. Now, FM's got that crummy rock and roll now. Oh, speaking of things crummy, what magnificent town are we in, friends? Oh, you poor idiots out there in Jersey. Oh, don't you wish you were here, Pennsylvania? We're in New York. The Big Apple. We made it. Well, you know, one thing, though, I'm going through it. Hey, now, Eddie, fella, come on, take him out. I'm right in the middle of the secretive period. And every night, me and Flick and Schwartz, you know, boys have a little group of guys they all hang around together with. Me and Flick and Schwartz and Bruno used to come home down through the alley, each one of us with our own secrets, by the way. I never told Flick or Schwartz or Bruno about my magazine. And I know they didn't tell me about a lot of stuff. And so the four of us would come home, see. Down through the alley, you know, just being kids. Looking at stuff. Oh, boy, I think one of the great educational mediums of all time is the alley. Have you ever walked up an alley in a good, quiet, suburban town, just looked at all the stuff you see? Oh, I love to go out to the dump, you know, and just stand there knee-deep in mankind's effluvia. I'm walking along there, see, and we used to go right through one of the big business sections of town to get home. We'd walk behind these stores. When all of a sudden, one day, Flick, me, Schwartz, and Bruno discovered this fantastic place. It had stuff you wouldn't believe that they'd throw out. How many of you, even to this day, secretly, when you're walking along Madison Avenue, and you see one of these trash things, you know, it says, help us have a cleaner New York, and you see this stuff, and you secretly, you want to look in, you know? Here you are, you're all dressed up, you know, and you've just come from this French restaurant. You say, look at that, a busted flashlight. I think I'll get... Oh, no. You know, oh, yeah, I remember, listen, I remember one day
standing down on 59th Street, you know, the big Columbus Circle subway station down there. They got about 500 of these trash buckets. And I'm standing on the edge of the track, see? And I'm an old junk picker. I'm all dressed up, you know. I look in, and there in this trash bin, you know the kind with the swinging thing? There sticking out is a busted radio. Well, that is a fantastic thing to find when you're a kid. You know, anything that's mechanical, it's got knobs and stuff, you pick it up, see? There's a busted radio, and it's hanging out the side, all broken, see? I walk away. I look again. There's nobody around. And then I see coming from this side a tall, gray-haired guy wearing one of these black Chesterfield coats, you know, with a velvet collar, derby hat. He comes walking along. He stops. And there are the two of us. Well, I want to tell you, I watched that guy edge over. He's got his attaché case. Snaps it open, in it goes. Well, I walked past him, and I said, "You too?" And he says, "Hey, listen." He says, "Have you ever been down to 23rd Street?" Well, you know, we were going through this period, see, of looking at this great stuff, when all of a sudden we discovered something that is magnificent. We discovered the backyard disposal area of our local dentist. Oh, you ought to see what dentists throw out. It's fantastic. I'm telling you, I'm coming along there, see, and here's all this film. Well, film itself was exciting because Flick and I and Bruner made stink bombs out of film. Ed, did I ever tell you about the time we broke up the Lithuanian Hall meeting with a stink bomb? Did you hear about that? Yeah, you take the film. I better not tell it on the air. We could start a wave of this, but there is a way you can make out of... I know how to do it. If any of you are interested, send your name and address to Whoopi. And you take this film and you make a very tight loop out of it. Very tight. You wind it together. You know, a long strip of movie film. You wind it until it's as hard as a rock. Then you do one other thing, which I won't tell you. Then you take a paper, a piece of newspaper, and you roll it in, and you tighten it and make two fuses on each end. Oh, do you have a weapon? And one night, Flick and Bruner and I, it's Halloween, by the way, and over here is the Lithuanian theater. We had a Lithuanian theater in our town, believe it or not. Great big marquee, Lithuanian names, all these steel workers going in, you know, guys named Stashek and all that, you know. Whole bunch of guys from the steel mill, see, and you could get into this terrible movie house for 10 cents. They had quadruple features. Yeah, they just went on and on. So Flick and Bruner and I get in the back of this place. And up there on the screen, they go, Yasha, cut her up. They're riding over the plains, you know. Well, you ought to see a Yugoslavian horse opera, you know. So we're sitting back there like that. Flick takes this thing, looks around. And he has his cigarette lighter, little Zippo, and he lights it. Black. Have to go to the job, fellas. I wait for a minute. I get up. Schwartz waits. He gets up. And 2 minutes later, all of us, me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner, are across the street waiting. We're just waiting. Oh, it's a terrible thing. I'll have to admit. If this ever gets back to Indiana, I'm liable to be busted. I'll never be on the air again. We're all standing out there, seeing this. It went about, I would say, 15 minutes, when all of a sudden, boom! About 500 Lithuanians come out, and they're yelling, and we're standing there. And you can hear the sirens coming from all over. Thousands of us.
the police arrived. And by this time, you know, I'm getting real scared. Like, and Schwartz, oh, let's get the hell out of here. So we sneak down the side street and we're gone. And the next day, the newspaper says, anarchists. Really, it says, anarchist radical rabble-rousers last night. I was way ahead. I was a very early demonstrator. You know? And so here we are, you know, we're walking down the street and we discover this film. At first, it was the film that got us. A lot of film there, see. Rex says, my God, look at the film. Schwartz says, look at the film. Oh, boy, wow. Here's this big pile of stuff. And then we began to uncover teeth. Have you ever seen the magnificent things that are pulled out of the human cranium? I'll tell you, we start to get these teeth. And Schwartz says, look at this one. Wow. At 9 roots, you know. Look at that. Oh, wow. Oh, boy. He sticks it in his pocket. Well, we started, the four of us are frantic. For about a half an hour, we're collecting teeth. And I'm talking about teeth. I'm talking about decayed teeth. You know, big holes in them, you know, and roots and stuff. I got a whole pocket full of them. Boy, I have great teeth. These are really great. And you know, we were always vying with each other. The sporting instinct in man is very strong, and he'll bet on anything. And we used to vie with each other to find the worst tooth. He had some big fangs, you know. You think he must have had some horses that were his patients, you know. And so I took these teeth, and I went home with them. And they were stuck in my corduroy knickers. Yeah, I had these corduroy knickers that were so ripe. Yeah, they were just like a compost heap. You know, they were 3 years old, and you could hear the twigs growing in them, you know. Moss growing on the side. And I took this pocket full of teeth. Now, I got home with them. I'm in the kitchen now. I got my salami sandwich. And I got this pocket full of decadence. Of decay. God, Bessie. Walking around. See? Now I'm in my bedroom. I take them out. Wow, you know. Look at the teeth. I had about 50 of them. Well, okay. There was some little secret thing in my mind that told me that ain't right. Yeah, you know, I think we have an inbuilt morality. We know when we're, you know, we know when we're doing it. We don't need any rules. And it says, this isn't right. So it says, okay. I hid him under my bed in a Prince Albert can. I put him in there, see? Okay, so I go out, I play ball. The next day, me and Schwartz, and Flick and Bruno, we make a beeline. And he's got a whole new collection. Yeah, there's a whole more teeth. Well, this went on for about 3 weeks. I am collecting some of the greatest teeth you ever saw in your life. And you know, every time I see my dentist now, it's funny, when I sit there, I never tell them about this, I've never mentioned it. But I sit there, you know, and they've got these new jazzy dentist chairs with the stereo plays, you know, the music, and they've got movies above you and all that stuff. Yeah, and they don't have nurses anymore, they have these ouries that come in. You know, she's got a fan, and I'm lying there, and I see over in the corner, I see that garbage can. And you know, one day when the nurse went out of the room, she's cleaning my teeth, I get up, I hit the thing, I open up, there's some teeth in there. And then she caught me before I said, I'm throwing my gum away. I was almost caught stealing teeth in a very expensive 57th Street dentist's office. How could I have explained that, you know? I just kind of like, 30 old rotten decayed teeth, right? Talk about a foot fetish. By the way, do you know that in India this week they're having a national convention of foot fetishists? Let's give them a hand for a good luck. Happy hang-ups, fellas. And so I'm collecting these teeth. Well, now I'm hiding them every night under the bed. This is that secretive period. And one night, I come in, I reach for my teeth. The can is gone. My mother has cleaned under the bed. You know, all the little grubbles and all the dirt that's under the bed and all the footballs and all the shoes and junk. It's all neat now. My can is gone. My mother's out. She's at the store. Oh, my God. What's she gonna do? I hear her coming up the back steps. I try to make it out the front. She says, stop! What do you want, Ma? She says, whose teeth are those? She says, whose teeth are those? She says, look at that. And here they are, claws, you know. She says, where did you get these? She says, where did you get those teeth? I'm going to give them back to whoever they belong to. I can just see, Mr. Applerot, we've got your molar here. She says, where'd you get those teeth? I says, well, me and Schwartz and Flick. Schwartz and Flick and Bruner, too? Yeah, we were coming up from school. She says, just a minute. And she goes and takes the phone and dials, and I can hear her talking to Mrs. Schwartz. She says, Mrs. Schwartz, would you please look under your boy's bed? And then you hear out of the phone, ah! And she says, well, I have a can here, too, yes. Yes, I'll call Flick's mother, yes. No, I'll find out, yes, you stay there. All right. Dials the phone. Oh, gee, I'm a fink. It's terrible to be a fink, you know, they're doing it. I can just see poor Flick walking around out in the yard, you know, innocently, you know, and the phone rings. He doesn't know, you know. My mother says, Miss, hello, would you please look under Flick's bed? No, you just look. And then, you know, it's funny, you can hear it both ends. They only live 4 doors down from us. I could hear it from the phone. I could hear her. It was an early stereo, actually. I could hear her, and then there was an instant pause, and I could hear Flick. Ah, yeah! You know, the long arm of retribution, you know, come in here with a teeth. Well, the four of us, you know, they were alerted in about a minute and a half. And my mother turned to me, and I'm standing there. You know, she's got the phone. She says, all right, now, where did you get those? Doesn't make any difference. You can't lie to me. Don't lie. How many times have you been told that as a kid? And how many times did you lie last week alone? You know, have you ever been able to put that habit? You know, every time I hear the word lie, I taste Lifebuoy soap. My mother's universal panacea for lying was a brand new bar of Lifebuoy right in the mouth. I used to stand there with it sticking out, you know, the bubbles. It makes pink bubbles, you know. When I got a little older, she changed to Palmolive. You know, my tastes were getting a little subtle. After that, it was Ivory, and then we went to Lady Woodbury. But, you know, there's a pause, see, and she says, all right, now, where did you get them? Well, we have Schwartz and Flick. Flick. She says, don't you tell me Flick pulled them. You know, I was wildly grasping, you know, like Flick pulled them out of Schwartz or something. You know, Flick pulled them out of Schwartz's dog or something, you know. Because, you know, somehow the idea, she never really knew, and to this day she never really has realized, that me and Flick and Schwartz and Bruner spent almost our entire kid world looking through stuff in the garbage. Yeah, I remember coming home from kindergarten and finding stuff that was far more educational than blocks. You know, boy, even to this day, you know. And she just knew, though, that we had gotten them someplace where we shouldn't. You know, you just don't come up with 7 pounds of dead teeth, easy. And so she says, all right, where did you get them?
Well, me and Schmorgen Flick and Brother, I mean, you were walking back in the...
I'm trying my cute face. Every one of us at one point in our life had a cute face. You know, the lovable face. Oh, it's all right, Jeannie, you know. I tried that on Mr. Leader one time. He threw me out of his office, you know. And I tried a face, and she says, all right. Did you get these out of the alley?
Yeah.
Did you get them from back of Mr. Goodman's office, Dr. Goodman? Dr. Goodman was this tall Presbyterian dentist. He had rimless glasses. You know, that kind of light sandy hair, quiet, thin man. And he was always at the PTA. He was a big guy in our neighborhood. And you know, he had this collection of teeth that every day he threw off in the back. And we were the first to bring his evil home to roost. And she said, did you get those from Dr. Goodman's house? Well, let me tell you, one of the worst moments in my life, she picked up the phone and dialed information. I want the telephone number of a dentist, a Dr. Goodman.
What's she going to say to him?
She dials. She says, Dr. Goodman, come over here and get your teeth. Dr. Goodman, my son has a 2-pound box of your teeth here. I don't know where he got them. He says he got them back at your place. Now you come and get them. They belong to you. Come and get them. I don't want them in the house. And she says, you stay here. 15 minutes later, this man came up the walk with a white coat. He knocks on the door and he says, is this where I got the call from? My mother says, yes, take your teeth back. Dr. Goodman says, well, how did you get them? She says, my son brought them home. You should have a better place to put your teeth. He says, thank you, ma'am. And she says, by the way, call up Mrs. Schwartz. It's 2 doors down. And he walked down and picked them up from them. Well, you should have seen that peculiar scene 20 minutes later. Schwartz and Flick and Bruner and me under the streetlight. And Schwartz turns to me and he says, did you tell her? I said, no, she found them. Flick's standing there. He says, now where are we going to get more? Where are we going to get more? Well, during that period of the secretness, I did something which only came to me about 2 weeks ago when I was in the museum. It hit me. I have a chance of 5,000 years from now making my mark. Really. I'm a kid. And I got these little things I've been collecting. Like, I've got, for example, an Orphan Annie pin. You know, important stuff. And I'm sitting in my bedroom and I've got an Orphan Annie pin and I've got a Boy Scout knife. And I got a big toenail that came off of me once. Yeah, did you ever get hit with a ball and then about 2 weeks later the toenail falls off? What do? Throw that away? After all, you only got 10 of them, you know. So I kept this toenail, you know, and I had all this stuff, see. And I had it in one of these tin Nabisco boxes. You know the Nabisco cracker box? I had about 50 things, great stuff like toenails and, I had Cracker Jack prizes. And one day,
I don't know why I did it. I guess it is a genuine human urge. Maybe it's subconscious. Maybe it's a drive for mortality. I go out in the backyard. I got my box. I go over the alley and into a vacant lot right behind our house. I dig a hole about 3 feet deep, and I buried my box of fantastic treasures. Toenail. I mean, that's a real treasure. It's my toenail, you know. It's a toenail there, you know, and there's a little Orphan Annie secret decoder pin. It's all packed there. I said, now they won't steal my stuff. I go back in the house and started to play second base. I played second base the next day. I played third base the week after that. And then I got interested in Esther Jane Allbury. Then we played other things. Not really. We just, you know, we'd walk along opposite each other on opposite sides of the street, you know. That was me and Esther Jane, see. And once in a while, I'd throw a rock at her. You know. She said, you stop throwing stones! It almost got her, Schwartz. Schwartz had a thing on Helen Weathers. He was the first guy to bring actual weapons into this fight. He got Helen Weathers with a BB gun. You know? And so I go through the Helen Weathers phase, and then I start going to high school, and gradually, my box of treasures disappeared from my mind. And do you know, I did not remember that box of treasures until 2 years after I got out of the Army. I'm in college. I come home. We're living in the same house, see. I'm still wearing my field jacket, you know, that whole bit of going to college with G.I. Bill. Yeah, I got a field jacket, I got jump boots, you know. Oh, you ought to see how great it is to come into the library, you know, with your mess kit banging, you know. Yeah, once in a while I'd go past the girls' gym and I'd lob in a grenade, you know. You know. Yeah, you know, I'd go past the principal's office once in a while, you know, with my bayonet out, I'd walk in. Oh, yeah, you know, in the whole, I'm living the whole thing. You know that while I was a GI, you know, GI student, I had my old field jacket, see, and the first thing you do, you take your stripes off, and there's that clean place where your stripes were, see. Well, I'm a corporal. Well, it was 2 weeks, I'm out of the Army, 2 weeks, and into college. And I'd already upped my rank to tech sergeant. You know, I had these big stripes, and I'd take them off, and I'd get that all nice and wrinkled there, you know, you could see. So I'm sitting in the kitchen. I'm home for a couple of days from school. And I look out, you know, I'm looking out of the back window. I'm looking at this vacant lot right back of the alley. And something made me look at it. I'm looking at it, and somehow it looked very, very inviting. It looked important, interesting. I sit back. Then I think, let's see, Esther Jane? No, that was over back of Flick's house, by the garage. I'm looking out there, and then it suddenly hit me. My toenail. My toenail is out there. My little Orphan Annie secret decoder pin. And then I had one of these little blue books that I had gotten someplace. It was, you might say, an off-Broadway story of Tilly the Toiler. It's a fantastic cartoon book, you know. They never had cartoons like that in the Chicago Trib. You know, it was really great. I hid that out there, see? I look at that thing. And then I get that urge, you know, I'll go out and dig it up. I go out there. There's this little plot of ground, see? No. I'll leave it there. I go back in the house and I sit down.
and I eat. My mother, you know, has this myth going that I actually like meatloaf. Yeah, every time I talk to her on the phone now, she says, when you come, I'll fix some meatloaf. And I'd, ooh, meatloaf. I hate meatloaf, you know. But I always eat it when I'm there, you know. And she has this other myth that I really, the one thing I really want to have more than anything else, then it's become attached to me. I even go into restaurants here in New York today. Guys that listen to the show, they think I like red cabbage. Listen, I had 400 million gallons of red cabbage. I can't stand it. And everywhere I go to this German restaurant, the guy says, oh, I listen to you all the time. We have Aro red cabbage. Well, you can't say it all. Come on. A filet mignon. Give me a... So my mother's got this thing, see? And now I'm sitting there and looking up. And I decide, no. I won't do that. And 2 or 3 years later, I come back. And now there's a house that's been built on the far end of the lot. And there's that same little knoll. These people are living within close proximity to an actual human toenail. And they don't know it. So a couple of weeks ago, you know, I just passed out of my mind. A couple of weeks ago, I'm in the museum and it suddenly hit me. 5,000 years from now, there is an expedition. These guys with their helmets. And, you know, they're walking, they're struggling through the ruins of what's left of Hammond, Indiana. There's a few little pieces of pipe sticking up, and they're digging. And one of them comes across this box, perfectly preserved. They open it up, and he says, my God, what a treasure. Look at this. A human toenail. This is obviously a religious sect. And look at this pin. Who is this girl with the secret numbers on it? It's this Orphan Annie secret society. And look at this. Look at this fantastic book here. Tilly the Toiler. And out of that little collection, they can form a whole picture of our civilization. An obscene book, a radio giveaway, and a toenail. Let's give the future a big hand, and let's bury it all before we go.
This WOR radio, your station for news. You stumble out of bed, bang into the bedpost, enter the bathroom in pain, and look at yourself. This WOR radio, your station.